This is the Science Behind the Art, where we discuss the insights of the cosmetic industry through a different lens, uniting scientists and artists. We are the New York Society of Cosmetic Chemists. I'm Maria.
I'm Regina.
And I'm Leah. Join us as we embrace beauty and dive behind the scenes of the cosmetic industry.
Welcome to our first podcast for Defining What's Natural. I would like to introduce you all to Ben Blinder. He has been a member of the New York chapter of the Society of Cosmetic Chemists since 1986. He currently is the executive director of business operations at Gâteau Fossé USA, with P&L responsibility for leading two business units, pharmaceutical and personal care science. He is helping to build and implement short-term and long-term strategic plans and ensuring strong sales growth throughout the United States and Mexico. He currently holds a degree in chemical engineering from Lee University and is a member of the NYSCC Scientific Committee. So, welcome, Ben, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ayelia, for having me.
So, just to get started, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you become an executive director?
Well, it's just a long and very interesting and fun road. I started out my career in the cosmetic industry within a couple of years of graduation from Lehigh. And I started out as a sales rep and moved into sales management. Then I moved into marketing and marketing management and gradually took on more and more responsibility throughout my career. At Gâteau Fossé, I had been leading the personal care division until just last month. I was promoted to the position of executive director, which now kind of runs not only the personal care side of the business, but also the pharmaceutical side.
Well, congratulations. That is very exciting. In your role as an executive director, just hearing your past experiences and just your growth, how does it feel now, like, be in such a powerful role? Like, has the responsibilities changed as it's progressed?
Well, it's changed actually in a few different ways. First of all, it's a lot more responsibility because now I am responsible for the business performance of the entire company, not just 50% of the company. But on the other hand, now I have a director who works for me who runs the personal care side and a director who runs the pharmaceutical side, and they deal with all of the strategic decisions within their teams. So beforehand, I was the one involved with that, and now I am kind of one step removed. So it's more intense work, but it's a little bit different because I am not as involved in the day-to-day strategic decisions, my teams. And so it's just a little bit of an adjustment. And, you know, of course, the other thing for me is the pharmaceutical side of the business is very new. And I have to learn that while still maintaining the deep involvement with the personal care side.
Right. Wow. I mean, that is, it's kind of like goals for me because I do want to hold such a powerful title one day. And I just love hearing your experience from just starting in sales and starting as a rep and then moving to marketing. And now you actually have a lot of weight in your company. So that is amazing.
Well, you know, the important thing in any job, whether you're a formulating chemist or on the sales side or purchasing or anything else, is very simple. It's just do the best job you can, keep learning and keep growing, and then the opportunities will come to you. You know, there's an old saying that says, nobody's lucky, you make your own luck. And the way you make your own luck is to always be ready for that next step when the opportunity comes before you.
Mm-hmm. I wholeheartedly agree to that. This is just a perfect jump off into our next question. So now that you are a executive director and you are in such a pivotal company that does play a large role in manufacturing ingredients for not just cosmetics, but also for pharmaceuticals. Have you came across or have you noticed now in our current climate that there's a lot of push for natural beauty or for natural ingredients? And when it comes to sourcing, people and consumers are trying to push for this narrative that we need natural ingredients to make natural products.
Oh, yes, of course. That is something that's growing, not just in the cosmetic industry, but look at the food markets, look at the energy markets, look at environmental concerns. You know, there is a growing feeling that if you are more natural and more concerned with the environment around you, it'll be better for you. It'll be better for your neighbors, your family. And the important thing is to keep the bigger picture in mind. You're not talking about a natural ingredient or a natural finished product. You're talking about the whole ecosystem. Mm-hmm. You see it in the newspapers, you see it in politics. It's just becoming more important throughout all the industries.
That is very accurate, because as someone who first started out, I was first interested in just like the criminal justice side of science. And eventually I did gravitate into cosmetics. However, when I first entered the industry, it seemed that the term natural was being interchanged with clean beauty and being vegan. And I'm curious to know, how would you define or explain what natural is to one, a industry expert, and then two, to just the average consumer?
Well, that is a fantastic question. It's the million-dollar question, because there is no one single definition. There are many, many definitions. You know, when you think about natural, what do you think about? Is the material natural, like a flower that grows from the ground? Mm-hmm. Is it naturally derived? So have you taken that flower and done something to it? If you've done something to it and maybe now it's 90% natural or 95% natural, but not 100%, is it still natural? Mm. What about plant versus animals? Obviously, animals are natural, but some people, no. To me, natural means plants. Mm. So if I were to answer what is natural question, what is natural from an industry person, I would say the easiest answer is ask your marketing department. Natural is whatever your marketing department tells you it is within your
Good point.
You know, you don't want to go under one set of assumptions and have your marketing people say, no, our company defines it a different way. Mm. So that's the first thing. To the consumer, to someone in the general public, it's a different question. Mm-hmm. Because when somebody wants to know, is it natural? Is the product natural? Is the ingredient natural? What they're really asking are two different questions. Number one, they're really asking, is it safe? And number two, they're really asking, is it sustainable? So first question, is it safe, means is it safe for you personally? And the question of is it sustainable is more, is it safe for the environment? You know, fair trade, atmosphere, climate, anything like that. And in this case, obviously, there is also no single set definition. You talk about clean beauty and things like that. But again, clean beauty focuses more on, is it safe? Not necessarily, is it 100% natural? If you look at something that might be 100% natural, you know, it's the classic example of mushrooms in the forest. Mushrooms are 100% natural, but would you just go and eat the first mushroom you found? The consumer, I think, if they want to know, is it natural? You really have to get to what is important to them. Is it a safe ingredient or product? Is it a sustainably made ingredient or product? And then you can answer the question a lot better. I should add that for ingredients and for finished products, there is a new standard that came out a few years ago, ISO 16128.
Right.
And I encourage people to do a little research. I'm not going to give the whole big explanation what that is now, but basically that is a calculation of the degree to which an ingredient or a product, finished product, is natural, of natural origin, organic, and of organic origin. It doesn't talk about safety. It doesn't talk about sustainability. Purely a calculation on the naturality index of that ingredient or product. So that might be one way also you could answer that question if you applied that new ISO standard, ISO 16128.
That is interesting that you say that, because I have heard of that new, well, not new, but I've heard that that was implemented a couple of years ago. However, even to this day, it seems that a lot of even industry experts just seem to post a blind eye to it. And it's not necessarily wrong that they did that, because like you said, their definition of natural is based upon their consumer and also their marketing. Like, who are they marketing to? And because of that, and because we have so many varying definitions of what is natural, I feel that even when I was just, or I mean, I still am a consumer, but even when before I was in the industry, I got confused with, okay, this company says this is what they think is natural versus this company who's saying the complete opposite. And now you're at a crossroads.
So back to the original question, as you, as a consumer, when you shop, sure, it may say it's this type of natural or that type of natural, but what do you care about? Do you care more about the safety? Do you care more about the sustainability? Do you care about both? And see if that product matches what you expect it to match, regardless of the words the marketing department uses to describe natural. And if you do that, I think you'll find something that, if it fits your sensibilities, you'll find something that appeals to you.
That's a very good point. And it just makes me wonder also, just for the future, since there is such a drive for we need to be renewable and use natural resources, use natural products, what do you project in the next 3 to 5 years in terms of this natural movement? Something happening with the ingredients or the materials that we have now? Will there be a shortage? Will there be a surplus?
Well, I'll tell you, I see a few things. First of all, I do not see any consensus coming in the next 3 to 5 years as to the definition of natural. It will always be marketing influenced and will always be dependent on a brand's proposition, whether you're an indie brand or an established multinational. So I don't see a clear definition coming out in 3 to 5 years. But what I do see are more and more brands entering into this natural arena and proclaiming they're natural or looking for natural formulations. You know, one thing that is very true, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago when the natural movement really started to take off, to be honest, many of the products on the market were not very good. Natural products that the manufacturers would put together a lot of natural ingredients, produce a lot of marketing copy, but the products either did not perform that well, or they didn't feel that well. Any personal care product, whether it's natural or not, you have to hit two key markers. The first is it must do what it says it does. So if it's an anti-wrinkle product, if it's a foundation with a certain degree of coverage, it must deliver what it says it will deliver. And the second thing is it must have very, very strong and positive sensory attributes. Even if a product is functional, if it doesn't feel right, if it feels draggy or tacky or sticky, no consumer will buy it a second time. It just won't be pleasant to use. And I think when the natural products first came out 15 or 20 years ago, they weren't very functional and they weren't very sensory positive. What I see has happened in the last 10 years and what I do see happening in the next 3 to 5 years and beyond is both of these attributes, both of these key markers are being addressed. More and more the products are functional and more products do have a very, very good sensory feel. And with that, then you'll reach the gold standard. You know, if you have two products side by side, one is more synthetic, one is more natural, but they both work and they both feel really nice, then I think most consumers would gravitate toward the natural product. And that's kind of where I see the market going, that just continually to up the performance of the finished product and up the sensory attributes of that product.
It's interesting that you do mention that, because I did learn recently that we are a pretty marketing industry. And as a consumer, I have to admit that if I were to choose between a tackier cream versus just one that's jelly-like and it glides on smoothly, I would choose the jelly cream, even though it's possibly going to perform. It may vary, but that sensory feel is what's going to make that difference.
Think about a pharmaceutical product. Many pharmaceutical products, let's say ones that come in a tube, are these thick, greasy ointments. Mm-hmm. They're ugly to look at. They may not smell that nice. They certainly don't feel nice, thick and greasy. But if it's your prescription, if it's your medicine, you're going to put that on.
Right.
But if you go to buy an anti-wrinkle product to remove crow's feet or something like that, would you put that same thick, greasy product on your face? I'm sure you probably wouldn't.
No.
And that's why on the personal care side, on the cosmetic side, sensory is extremely important. It must look, you know, and feel like it's elegant to use and elegant to wear and very comfortable, because when you take prescription, it's necessary. Mm-hmm. When you're on a cosmetic product, it's optional. And why would you put something that's optional onto your body if it didn't feel nice and feel comfortable?
Right. That is very, very true. When it comes to just the natural products and just this growing natural trend in general, I am curious about what is your position on just, there have been concerns that when it comes to using naturally sourced ingredients like palm oil and, well, the big one right now is palm oil, they are just, these natural resources are becoming scarce. How do you think that as an industry, not just cosmetics, but pharmaceutical, food, how is this an issue that we can tackle so that in the future we don't have a lack of those resources?
Well, that's an excellent question. And that's where the concept of sustainability comes in, whether it's fair trade, whether it's ecologically responsible. And the example you brought up, palm oil, is a perfect example. Take a look at palm oil. Palm oil is used, obviously, not just in our industry, but it's used much, much more broadly in the food industry and industrial operations and things like that.
Especially industrial.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But the food industry is huge. Mm-hmm. So your gut reaction may be, okay, well, you know, the harvesting of palm oil is usually not sustainably done. And I will get to the sustainable part of that in a minute, so just bear with me. But if people are concerned about that, their idea would be, okay, let me stop using palm oil.
Right.
The problem with that is palm oil is a very high yield crop. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it has 6 times the yield of the next most used natural oil crop, which means that if you take away palm oil and you want to substitute it from, I don't know, coconut oil, something else, now you have to plant 6 times at least the forests, or looking at it from a negative standpoint, you have to deforest 6 times as much to get the same amount of oil. So palm oil is actually a very, very good product in the abstract, because it has such a high yield, you need much less space to grow it. Now, let's look at the problem of deforestation and environmental damage and displacement of the natural animals and wildlife and things like that. It's a serious, serious issue, and it's very important that we address it. And so rather than stopping the use of palm oil, which would result again in more deforestation and more planting of more crops for other oils with worse yields, let's try to see if we can stop the deforestation, stop the damage to the environment, stop the damage to the wildlife, and try to get palm oil in a more sustainable manner. And that's where the RSPO comes in, which is the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil. And it's their job to ensure that if you do use palm oil, that it is done, grown and marketed and shipped in a sustainable manner that reduces or eliminates all of these damaging effects. So whether it's palm oil, whether it's any other ingredient, you could talk about shea butter from the African continent. You could talk about many, many other ingredients that come from sensitive parts of the world, from the Amazonian rainforest and things like that. The key is sustainability. It is fair trade. It's worrying about and fixing the problems and the damage to the environment and to the farmers and to the wildlife. And if you can do that in a sustainable way while still getting the benefits of that plant or that material, then you can still wind up with something that's useful for the market, useful for the consumers, but also not damaging to the environment. Again, look at it holistically. Look at it, just the benefits of the material, but look at the sustainability of the environment that it's grown and produced in. And if you can do that, whether it's an ingredient from any part of the world, then you're on the right track.
I appreciate your transparency and just how you were able to eloquently explain that, because it seems, well, the average consumer, they are doing their research to a degree. They are listening to a degree. But when it comes to deforestation, RSPO, palm oil, and just the lack of resources, it seems that they are listening, but then it seems that there is just an extreme perspective that it just needs to stop. And it seems that trying to explain this information just to the average consumer, sometimes it just...
Well, it just goes, you know, there's a larger issue here. And I know we don't have time to get into it in this podcast, but it's really the lack of scientific education among many people and even the lack of critical thought. And I'm not getting into politics, and I'm not telling you what side of the fence I fall on, red or blue, because it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. But what is absolutely true is that, you know, many consumers want to have it both ways. They don't want to use palm oil because they don't understand the sustainability aspects of the RSPO, sustainably sourced palm oil. But if you say, well, I have a synthetic oil that works just as well. Oh, no, that's not natural. I can't use that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in the end, simply saying and overstating the case just to make a point, there's nothing you can do to satisfy that consumer. And there's many consumers like that. Mm-hmm. So do you try to come up with something that's misrepresented or greenwashed or whitewashed? No, that's not the answer. And that's not the right way to go. The right way is to try to increase the education of what a product or an ingredient or a material is, what sustainability is, how the material really comes about. You know, the key word that everything comes back to is transparency. Mm-hmm. If you're transparent about how you produce your ingredient, how you manufacture your finished product, if you can explain everything in a clear way that doesn't have so much marketing spin, but it has a lot of grounded in reality spin, then you have a better chance of raising the scientific education of a particular individual. And hopefully that person then has more information to make the right choice for them. For everybody, it's different. Some people don't have an issue with synthetic as long as the synthetic is safe and produced with a low carbon footprint and so on and so forth. You know, you hear about peptides quite a bit in cosmetic products, and almost every peptide out there is synthetic. Mm-hmm. So people love peptides and they love to use peptides and they love the marketing buzz around peptides. But peptides, for the most part, are synthetic, not natural. But yet they're accepted by the average consumer. So there is a way, whether you talk about sustainability, whether you talk about naturality, whether you talk about the synthetic materials, there is a way to educate the consumer so they can make the best choice for themselves. And I think when it comes to sustainability, the marketing teams at the larger companies just have tried to do a better job of that and getting that message across.
Wow. Yeah. I just really appreciate, one, your transparency on this, and two, just your insight that as an industry, we recognize that this is an issue, just the information that's being translated to the consumer. And because of this, I do recognize now that even as just a student and future formulator, I do have a responsibility to at least provide them with the information and they can come to their own conclusions. But I at least gave you the proper information as to why as an industry, this is the direction that we're going in.
And I think that's all you can do. Give people the proper information and the proper background to make their own choice. Mm-hmm. And whatever choice they make is up to them. It's the same thing when you buy a car. Do you buy a traditional gas-powered vehicle? Do you buy an electric vehicle? Well, some people say, well, obviously electricity is better for global warming and carbon emissions, but the carbon footprint to make an electric vehicle sometimes is higher than to make a combustion vehicle. So
the irony.
Right. So give people all the information, be transparent, let them research what concerns them, and then they can make the best decision for themselves and hopefully, for the rest of society and come to the right decision.
I agree. Well, on to my next question, which we kind of just touched on that, the different opinions and perspectives of natural beauty in our industry. Have you noticed that the perspectives have changed when it came to the natural term being used on cosmetics? But I'm curious to know, 10, 15 years ago, what was being natural like for cosmetics back then?
Well, back then, being natural meant that you could put a pretty picture of a flower on the label and give the impression that your product has a lot of flowers in it. And that was enough. That was enough. That was enough for many consumers to feel more comfortable in buying that product. Obviously there was marketing copy and there were advertisements and commercials and things like that. But it was purely, I would say, from a marketing perspective rather than a scientific perspective. And I think it took a company like The Body Shop, which was one of the first companies to start really talking about animal-free and more concern about the environment and things like that, to kind of open people's eyes that there was more than just a marketing story. And obviously, Body Shop was not the only company. There were others throughout the world, not just in Europe or in the US. Mm-hmm. But I think it took companies like that to really show people that don't just look at the label, don't just read the marketing copy. Pay more attention about what's in the product and how the product was produced and even the packaging. Is the packaging returnable and recyclable and things like that? So you get a more holistic view now that you did not have, 15 or 20 years ago of the concept of natural and sustainable and things like that. And I think now, when somebody goes to the store to shop, whether they understand all the science or all the ingredients or all the technical jargon, I think they are looking at the bigger picture at least. And they're looking not just at what's on the label. Okay, there's a picture of a flower. But I think they are looking at the ingredient listing and they are, in some cases, researching the company. And they do know certain company names like, The Honest Company or The Body Shop. Some of these companies automatically come to mind to a consumer with that natural perspective. And that's not something that had happened all those years ago.
You brought up an interesting point when it comes to packaging. There is now, consumers are now becoming more aware that of our waste when it comes to not just cosmetic products, but even for pharmaceuticals, for food, for just industrial. And I have began to notice that even some products that I use that claim to be natural, when it came to their packaging, it actually wasn't as renewable as I would have liked. And I'm curious to know, when it comes to creating just natural packaging, what essentially does that create more of a carbon footprint as well, because we're putting a lot of energy and resources into, because not every company uses a glass bottle or biodegradable plastic, but these new alternatives, do they just contradict the whole natural movement?
Well, I don't work on the packaging side, but I can offer you this perspective. That the most important thing besides the product itself when a consumer brings something home is the ease of use. How easy it is it to use that product? Mm-hmm. And if they have to open three lids to get at something, and if they have to then take something back to the store to replace it with a clean container, it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And people don't like that. So I think the approach companies have taken is not necessarily to make it easier to use all this packaging or do something with this packaging or consider this packaging. What they've done is they've just made less of it. So for example, when you used to have a jar in an overwrap, in a box, in another box, in a plastic bubble wrap, you know, five layers of packaging. Now you can probably just buy that jar in one paper box, right? Mm-hmm. So the product, you still apply it the same way. You still either recycle or most likely throw it in the garbage. But there's a lot less of that packaging. You don't have the plastic overwrap. You don't have this box and that box and this cardboard wrap and things like that. So I think that's a very good step, is you're just starting with less material that could be wasted afterwards. Following that, you know, in the future, obviously, the best thing would be to reuse your container, reuse your jar, get it washed and refilled. And if companies can figure out a way that consumers can do that with minimum effort and minimum inconvenience, it'll be good. But I don't think we're at that point yet. I think convenience and ease of use are still the top things that concern consumers. Mm. And if those things are not addressed, the consumer is just going to take that packaging and throw it in the garbage or throw it in the recycled bucket, and that's the end of it.
That's very true. And it seems that even as I'm more so in the industry, I seem to forget that the ease of use, just that aspect, is just so ingrained in me now. But even then, I don't realize that, especially when I open up my packaging and then I realize, oh, I'm almost low. I can refill it. But then I'm like, kind of don't feel like it. But, yeah. You know, I guess that is just...
It's human nature. And again, it's not just cosmetic or personal care products. It's anything else. If it's not easy to use, and if you don't have an easy way to recycle something or repurpose something, you probably won't do it. Mm-hmm. Talk about the food industry. Talk about composting. Mm. So much food waste. And if you look at many, many of these holistic, natural food practitioners, every one of them says, compost your food waste. It's easy. It's convenient. And you can plant a garden in your backyard. But you know what? It's not easy and it's not convenient. And it's smelly and it's dirty and it's a lot of hassle. That's why most people don't compost their own food waste. Mm-hmm. Is it the right thing to do? Is it a sustainable thing to do? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But you could ask 100 of your friends and you're probably going to get at least 95 of those 100 who do not compost.
Yep.
because it's not easy and it's not convenient. If there was a way, again, to get people to that point where it's super easy, super convenient, you don't even think about it, and then boom, you know, 2 weeks later you have your compost material, then more people would do it. But that's not at that point yet either.
Mm-hmm. So just for the record, for the average consumer, as an industry, we should definitely pay attention to how we convey the information to them, if it is accessible for them to, like, just that ease of access to get that information. And also just so that they're just not left in the dark about these are things that we can do, but it's just up to you whether or not you want to do it. Because, I mean, it is an inconvenience to refill your bottle, send it back, get a rebate or stuff like that. So that is definitely a beautiful way to just envision what our industry could look like in the next few years.
Yeah, well said, well said.
And I would say my second to last question would be, you know, since you do work for a pretty awesome company, I used to work with your products a lot as a R&D technician. If you were to create a natural product for a customer with only one ingredient, which would you use and why?
Well, that is also a great question. And I could always come back to you and say, well, what's the marketing brief? Who's your consumer? What are your cost parameters? I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it. But, you know, if you're only creating a product out of one ingredient, chances are you want to look for something that has good moisturization potential. You want to look for something that has a good emollient, you know, a nice feel, good sensory characteristics, you know, how it picks up, how it rubs in. And obviously, if it's only one ingredient, you won't be able to add a preservative because that would be a second ingredient. So I want it to be something that is not subject to rancidity or anything like that. So we have a product called Actisir MB. And Actisir MB is a 100% natural texturizing agent. And it's based on a complex of jojoba, mimosa, and sunflower waxes that is functionalized with a natural polyglycerol. And the reason you need that functionalization is that natural waxes, of course, they come from renewable sources. They provide a good barrier against water loss, but they often don't have a very, very nice skin feel at all. And, you know, we talked a lot about sensory and elegance on the skin. So with this functionalization step that we perform, we provide these waxes in a form that gives you excellent sensory characteristics. So this particular product, what it does, Actisir MB, is it forms a nice smooth feel on the skin, protects the skin from dehydration, and gives you a very comfortable skin feel after it's been applied. And I think these are all some things. It doesn't need a preservative. It doesn't go bad. And these are things that a consumer would be very interested in. It does have Cosmos certification, so you know it has that natural stamp of approval. It's China approved, so you can sell it worldwide. And that's what I recommend.
Okay. And my last question is, if I were, as a formulator, to use that ingredient, what would you recommend for that to be applied for, more so just for like the skin, body, like a shower gel, cleanser, or maybe hair, shampoo, leave-in conditioner?
Well, usually it's used as an ingredient in a larger formula with, you know, 10 or 20 different ingredients. And if you use it within a product, then you have a wider degree of use. If you're using it alone, if this was to be the only ingredient, you know, a jar just of Actisir MB, then it's probably more for hand or body, a little bit for face, where you want that intense moisturization with the very nice skin feel. You know, you wouldn't want to put it in a shampoo or anything like that. And by itself, of course, it has no coloration, so you wouldn't want to use it as a makeup or anything like that. It's more of a, would be a skin or a body moisturizing type product.
Well, that is definitely a ingredient that I will be researching, especially since that will be the only ingredient that you would use. But thank you so much, Ben. This was a lovely podcast. And for our listeners, please be sure to check out our old and new podcast that will be coming out very soon. So thank you, Ben, for joining us. This was a very lovely conversation.
Thank you, Zylie, and thanks again for having me.
Like what you heard? The NYSCC is here to move cosmetic science forward. Stay tuned to our next episodes and visit nysec.org for more content.